Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of May 2022. I am your host Robert, and I just really need the end of this month to get here for certain heavy metal dark fantasy related reasons. No pressure though. And with me I have
Joyner Lucas at the NBA Finals in Boston. That sounds like a very awful pit of hell, so count me out.
And
you had to remind me that Drake has an album coming out tonight.
Listen, we were all caught off guard by that. We were all caught off guard.
So basically he wait 9 months after Certified Loser Boy, and then this shit happens.
Yeah, clearly the baby on that album cover was this new album.
I have to ask, is the album art as cringe as that one?
Depends on your perspective.
Look, cringe is cringe. Either it is or it ain't.
It's Drake, so is there really an option?
No, no, there is not.
We'll prepare for another album bomb coming up, and it'll be the one hit single with a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. Actually, does anybody even remember anything that came off of Certified Lover Boy? I couldn't tell you a damn thing. Fuck, even the one that... Even Take Care had that stupid dancehall shit.
Besides that stupid sexy... the stupid way too sexy shit with them sampling Red Spike Said Friend and that...
Wait, and was that album? I thought that was the one before. Goes to show you how little I pay attention or give a shit.
It all blends together anyway.
Yeah, it's all blends together. This. So in short, next month we ain't touching this.
No, we are not. Not even if someone pays us all $500 each. I have some integrity. But anyway, what we are here to talk about is, of course, the month of May 2022. Right around the time when everybody would be getting out of school and heading into the summer and, you know, other things. So, yeah, closing in on the first half of the year almost being over. So let's see what exactly May had to bestow upon us. As always, we'll get started with what exactly in the hell came out this past month. Starting right up at the top, during the week of May 6th, 2022... Well, just a little bit before that day, there was the first new Black Star album in 22 years, No Fear of Time. Then, delving into May 6th proper, we had a new Hailstorm project, Back from the Dead. Apparently, this month, actually, for real, totally, was when that new Fozzy album, Boombox, came out. There was, unfortunately, a new 3 Days Grace project called Explosions. Just stating for well over a decade, apparently, the Matt Heafy-Eason collaboration album Rashomon, under the name Ibaraki. There was a new Silverstein project, Misery Made Me. There was the brand new IDK EP, Simple. There was a new Simple Plan thing called Harder Than It Looks. Hey, it's a dick joke. There was a new Arcade Fire project, Wii. There was a new project from El Muerto star Bad Bunny with Un Verano Sin Ti. But who cares? Morbius! And there was the newest album from KFC spokesperson Jack Harlow, Come Home, The Kids Miss You. Now moving on to the week of May 13th, 2022. Friday the 13th. Ooh, mysterious. There was a brand new album from death metal act Misery Index with Complete Control. We had a new one from doom metalers Primitive Man with Insurmountable, the EP. Quelle Chris dropped his newest project, Death Fame. There was a new Black Keys album, Dropout Boogie. There was a brand new Florence and the Machine album, Dance Fever. Tragically, there was a new Chainsmokers album, So Far So Good. But in a significantly huge upturn from there, there was, of course, after, let me see if I remember the count here, 1,855 days, the brand new Kendrick Lamar album, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. Now, moving on to the week of May 20th, we, of course, had the brand new album from Cave In with Heavy Pendulum. There was a new project from metal band Blut Aus Nord. I always say Blunt for some reason. Titled Disharmonium Undreamable Abysses. There was a new James LaBrie solo project, Beautiful Shade of Grey. We had a brand new Septic Flesh album, Modern Primitive. A brand new collaboration between Boldy James and Real Bad Man with Killing Nothing. There was the new Flume album, Palaces. There was, unfortunately, Pat Monahan's latest collection of brain droppings with Train's AM Gold. And, just as unfortunate, the new Harry Styles solo album, Harry's House. Now, a little bit afterwards, just before the next actual Friday, on May 25th, there was a brand new album from Japanese alternative rock band Man With A Mission titled Break and Cross the Walls 2. Now, moving on to May 27th proper, there was a collaboration project between Joey Purp and Kami with You and the Money. There was a new Def Leppard album with Diamond Star Halos. There was a brand new Wilco project, Cruel Country. And then, all the way at the end of the month, there was something from Christina Aguilera called Aguilera, titled so, because it's an album, an EP compilation, I guess, I don't know. Apparently she's doing like a trilogy of EPs that are all being compiled into a fuller project later on down the road. And from what it said on like the calendars and shit, apparently the second EP came out May 30th, but then an actual album thing came out May 31st. I don't fucking know. Do I look like the internet's expert in Christina Aguilera to you? I think I have better things that I could be studying with my time. But yeah, that basically about does it for some of the more notable and prominent things that dropped throughout the month. Now it's time for us to actually delve into the nitty-gritty of things with, you know, recounting what it is we were actually listening to. And of course, as always, Alex has the floor to get things started.
Okay. Just a heads up, we will be talking about one album in particular in full at the end. Read the description on this episode if you want to know what it is if you haven't already. Which, if you haven't already, what are you doing here?
Reading is good, kids. You should do it sometimes.
Yes. Reading is vital.
Bitch.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, I have a selection of albums here to talk about, and sadly, no, I did not listen to that new album from Hailstorm, or Simple Plan, or 3 Days Grace. Don't worry, I still have 6 albums here. I filled my quota, so I don't have to listen to a bad album as punishment like I had to do because of last month, but I'll get to that in a moment. So, first, from Ibaraki Rashomon. Yes, a project many years in the making between Matt Heafy from Trivium and Eson from Emperor and, well, Eson. Blending aggressive metal, black metal, a little bit of core, and Japanese folklore together in a fantastic package. And right away, this being a black metal album by genre with actual production that doesn't sound like it's being mixed in an empty Pepsi can, it's a big plus for me.
I know.
I hate how tinny and thin a lot of black metal sounds. I get that's the quote-unquote vibe they like to go for. I don't like it one bit. Yeah, along with that, this album does break a lot of the, as it's spelled, Truvu Kvult rules. And I'm all for it, because I hate the true cult bullshit. Give me more diverse elements and styles as opposed to, well, 90% of black metal. Although Nurgle showing up on Akumu is a nice touch, along with Gerard Way on Ronin, and a conveniently quick Mario Brothers sample at the start of Tamashii no Hokai. Yes,
good.
I heard that.
I knew that wasn't just me. I wasn't just hearing things.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well done with this album, Matt. This is my favorite Trivium, but not really Trivium album, because, yeah, they were the band on the album. You got the connections, so you may as well use them. But, yeah, very good album. All right, now for a random poll that wasn't in the rundown. The 6th album from British art rock band Everything Everything, Raw Data Feel. Going into this band with not a lot of prior knowledge on who they are, this proved to be an interesting experience to me. I know someone in the Rock Discord who is a big fan of Everything Everything, so I'm just going by word of mouth here. Especially with this album having a bit of a wild concept of sorts to it. So frontman Jonathan Higgs developed an AI bot with some help from the University of York named Kevin to compose a section of lyrics on this album from four aggregated sources. Confucius,
well,
the Beowulf poem, 400,000 4chan posts, and the terms and conditions from LinkedIn.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Admittedly, this only amounted to 5% of the lyrics on the album, but it's still a pretty wild experimental idea to craft lyrics out of. It fits with the music. It's very synthetic, quote-unquote futuristic, dystopian. It's still a pretty wild idea, though. But the music as a whole is a nice compressed blend of synth pop and alternative rock, and it really is the instrumentation and arrangement on this album that shines the brightest on the album. I said that twice, I don't know why. It's just crafted into a subsection of alternative all its own. This album won't be revolutionary to a lot of people, but it's still a good time with some futuristic synth vibes to it. Also, I can't help but admire our closing track with an AI-generated title of Software Great Man.
I see.
Yeah, it's that's the expected reaction I was looking for with a band like Everything. That's what I got out of it. Now, this new Arcade Fire album, admittedly, my knowledge of Arcade Fire only resides in just a few songs off of Neon Bible from 2007, which, Jesus Christ, that was a long time ago. And I don't know a whole lot about the rest of their catalog, but I have heard good things about this new album, so I gave it a listen. It's a very good album. 40 minutes, 10 tracks, technically 5 songs. It's a bit of a part one, part two idea going on here. And it's full of alternative rock vibes mixed with the ear-soothing synth pop. That's fine by me. The tracks Age of Anxiety and End of the Empire have to do with our continued hellscape. Written with impeccable timing, long before the hellscape materialized 2 years ago. Some of these ideas spanned all the way back to Funeral from 2004, which proves that time continues to be a stupid flat circle. Unconditional Kid has a nice Peter Gabriel feature to it, and The Lightning materializes a lot of older and earlier Arcade Fire traits from what I've gathered, though I'll leave a discussion of the suburbs and Funeral in comparison to this to the more diehard fans. And I'll end things off by saying this is a very good album to fit those indie college rock itches you may get one afternoon. Just put it on and just vibe out to it. Okay. Fozzy, Boombox. Apple Music says this album came out May 6th, so it counts for this month. And it's also my punishment for not hitting my 6th album quota for April, so here goes.
Oh dear.
I will say again, Fozzy actually does have a start-to-finish good album in Chasing the Grail from 2010. But I'll also say that everything since then has been kinda Even their biggest single, Judas, has worn out its welcome in the 5 years since it's been out. But the band still goes forward crafting the music whenever they can. So the lead-off single, Sane, is definitely the most single-centric track on the album. It has some solid hooks to it, and it would make for a good crowd participation song. If they could get crowds of more than just a couple hundred people, but I digress. As for the rest of the album, I'd probably like it a small bit more if Chris Jericho didn't sound so obviously auto-tuned on a lot of it.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was something wrong with what I was playing it back on, whether it was coming from Apple Music or my headphones. But no, I looked up a couple of reviews, and the word auto-tune showed up more than once. And when I was listening closer to some of the tracks, yeah, I could hear it. Not helping matters, though, is that a lot of the rest of this album is honestly kind of basic. And if it's not basic, then it's just dumb. Here's a sample from the track Ugly on the Inside in the chorus. And just as a heads up, no, I did not make this up as a joke. This is what was actually written in the song. U-G-L-Y. You ain't got no alibi. You're ugly, ugly, ugly on the inside.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, this is not the finest moment of this band's existence.
Did Chris Jericho turn into a 2000s high school cheerleader?
For what it's worth, he's not credited for writing lyrics on this on any of the songs. That lies with Rich Ward and a couple other members of the band.
My question still stands.
It doesn't change the fact that this is still pretty bad. Then there's a cover of Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Relax, which, yeah, it's a song that Gunna would be more into, if you know what I mean.
Oh, God.
If you know the song, you know what I mean. It's about getting off, if you catch my drift. Fluffing your Garfield, if you get what I'm saying.
I'm not sure I want to get what you're saying.
Yeah. All right, so what else is there on this album? No, the rest of the album is just kind of bleh, active rock tropes compiled together, and that's kind of boring to me. This was boring! Don't quit your day job, Chris. I like seeing you get the fuck beaten out of you on TV. Yeah. Okay, now for this new James LaBrie solo album, Beautiful Shade of Grey. Now, the last time I got a solo album from James LaBrie was back in 2013 with Impermanent Resonance, the second of two solo albums that blended pop structures and songwriting with melodic death metal, along with some electronic synth work on this one that was crafted between him and his songwriting partner, Matt Guillory. But he's not a part of this album this time around. Instead, it's a collaboration between James LaBrie and Eden's Curse members Paul Logue and Christian Pulkkinen on bass and keyboards, along with Marco Svogli on guitar, who's done a lot of work with James LaBrie in the past on the solo albums, and James LaBrie's son Chance on drums. And in comparison to the heavy approach on the previous album, which had detuned 7-string guitars galore, electronic synths all over the place, and Peter Vildur from Darkane on drums and harsh vocals. I love those two albums. This is more of a contemporary singer-songwriter kind of album, with plenty of acoustic guitar all throughout. In fact, there's barely any electric guitar to be found, save for a few solos and a bonus version of the lead-off single Devil in Drag. This is definitely an album catered towards songwriting, the musical scope and tone, in comparison to the last couple solo albums, or even the ones before that, the Mole Muscle albums, and Elements of Persuasion. That was what I'm thinking of. Though I can't help but feel like Days of the New with prog overtones and pop lyrics is the best comparison to make for this album, so make that what you will. There's also a cover of Led Zeppelin's Ramble On included, because why not?
Okay, then.
I mean, it sounds fine, but yeah. Not a very loaded month, because there was one album in particular we're going to talk about later, but there was one other thing that came out that I actually did buy on vinyl. Oh. And it was the May release of Dream Theater's Lost Not Forgotten Archives reissues Sing.
There it is.
And it's a big one. It's the Falling Into Infinity demos. This is when I'm glad I can put my fandom knowledge to good use here, because this is a very, very important release in the discography of the band. Those of you who know about Dream Theater's history know that Falling Into Infinity is not the most well-received album. It is an album riddled with compromise. executive turnover at their label, which I think would have been East West going to Elektra. So, you know, that means whatever. And, oh boy, the compromises made for this album. Songs were chopped up, songs were cut, songs were changed. Goddamn, Desmond Child was hired to rewrite one of the songs. We don't talk about that song. So, after that album was released in 97, the band reworked some things, and they got carte blanche to do whatever the hell they wanted. And we got Metropolis Part 2, which is excellent. But back in 2006, I believe, in the original You'd Say Jam Records days, the Falling Into Infinity demos were released on CD, which compiled 16 tracks of demo recordings from those fateful sessions before the final sessions began. In short, this is what I like to call Falling Into Infinity, Mike's version. Mike being Mike Portnoy in this case. The story of this album, songs, it's a very interesting take of the three songwriters, James LaBrie, John Petrucci, and Mike Portnoy. James LaBrie had a couple other songs written that didn't make the cut. I believe they were The Way It Used To Be and Speak To Me, I think. Very personal-based songs. Mike Portnoy, of course, was very pissed off during this time. You could tell by in the lyrics of Burning My Soul and Just Let Me Breathe, which is just a gigantic fuck you to the music industry, which I'm all a big fan of. Along with New Millennium, which is a bit more optimistic with more, you know, prog flavors. Then there are the songs that didn't make the cut, like Raise the Knife, a.k.a. Mike Portnoy's 12-minute diss track to then-ex Dream Theater keyboard player Kevin Moore. The lyrics, they are a little sharp. Get it? Knife? Sharp? Yeah. Yeah. Tortured artist bears his soul. Seems the pressure took its toll. If a life's so punishing, now he keeps the publishing. Fantastic. Fantastic. I love that. Laughing sarcastically, you turn your back on the people who adored you. Self-absorbed exhaustion. Self-esteem distortion. Self-infused extortion. Self-serving abortion. I'll take the blame for these things that I say, because I had the heart and the will and the courage to stay. That is a little ironic considering what happened a couple years later, but you know, we know all about that.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. As for the song that dare not be named, there's a different version in the demos called You or Me, which is more of an... I don't know if you want to call it obtuse or cryptic kind of lyrical explanation. But it's much more simplified with what John Petrucci wrote out there. It's also structured better than the other version, which again, we don't talk about. Yeah, Burning My Soul, the great Mike Portnoy Fuck You track, with a bit of a difference to it. On the actual version of the album, there's an instrumental track, Hell's Kitchen. That was written to be the instrumental break of Burning My Soul, that... I don't know why I'm doing that. Why am I doing that? But yeah, anyway, it's a good instrumental passage. Though I will say Burning My Soul works a little better with that section taken out into its own thing. It just feels a little like it was trying to be like a Master of Puppets kind of deal. Didn't quite work, though. I'll give him credit for trying it, though, but yeah, whatever. Cover My Eyes is probably the shortest song Dream Theater has ever written in full. It's a 3.5-minute rock jam. Could have been a good single, but didn't make the cut. These songs actually were released either as B-sides on singles in like Europe or as part of a fan club CD. But then there's basically the piece de resistance of the whole release. The original Metropolis Part 2 demo. 21 minutes of just jamming, because that's all they had available, just recorded off, I think it was like a 4-track or whatever. It would serve as the basis of the Metropolis Part 2 album a couple years later, and it's kind of interesting to hear it in its more embryonic form. That was a big word I just said.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a very important release in the quote-unquote canon of the band's history. Basically, it was released with the intention to be what Falling Into Infinity should have been. Which, if it were released like this, it would have been almost 2.5 hours across 2 CDs. Which, in 1997, would have been an immediate red flag with them going, no, you're not doing that. Thankfully, once you get a couple things organized in Executive Branch, you can get the pull to do stuff like this. And seeing how Warner probably won't give up the albums that they've released back to them anytime soon, it's good that we have these archive releases of sorts that they do in fact own outright to have, you know, under their control to be released to everyone out there who hasn't heard it for the first time. Because I guarantee you, there are new fans out there who have never heard these older releases for the first time. And having them available, you know, on vinyl and on CD and on, you know, Apple Music and Spotify and whatever, it is a good, it is a very good, good thing. I'm good with words. It's a good thing for people to have access to, you know, should they want to hear these songs in earlier forms, which I'm all in favor of. I'm just stumbling all over my words. I'm going to take a break now.
What are words? What is language? But anyway, now with that part out of the way, we now move to part two, where Mark recounts his album listenings and how he hopefully avoided a truly horrible experience. Whatever that might have been this month, I don't know. But were there any notoriously terrible albums besides Jack Harlow? I'm not sure I wish to find out.
I don't know, but I'll just say this. Lisa didn't go to Chainsmokers, even though I don't do it in the first place, so there's that.
Thank God.
but thankfully on this month, I only had six albums to talk about. All the more, mostly one being an EP. One, if I was an EP, but has length of an album and all that other stuff. Well, technically, anyway, I'm gonna get it on. So, first things first. We get the IDK and Kitchenada. They've been on the EP, Simple. And, of course, I was a bit curious once hearing the two singles released with Taco and Dog Food. Realizing that most of what I was talking about was mostly bullet cases and heroin. No, really, that's what Molotov meant. Taco in the DMV meant bullet casings, or basically shells.
Oh dear.
And dog food basically slang for heroin, as in it looks, you know, raw, brown, rock, and, you know, in hard pebble form, like you found in most kibbles and bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to say, for this EP, this is really good. Like, I think I like this better than the album released last year. And maybe because a good project at least you wanted more, and we wanted more, because, like, it's an EP, or as he says, call it an album, EP, whatever you like, but it's still short. Basically, the whole scope of this album is that it's him taking a trip to Paris, while he gets inspired about his life in the DMV. Basically, you're on vacation, you're thinking about the good times from Paris, but then you're missing things back home, which, That's like a bit of a downer. That's like a bit of a downer. But at least you're far away from that. And I mean, there's a choice where this one joint called Brief has some vocalizing. Like, this got one of the most smooth and vibiest beats on here, which, I mean, it's not, there's really not a verse on here. It's just like him doing interlude, like, basically, you know, catching his breath, and vocalize, which, you know, he does a decent job vocalizing on there, which, yeah, like, the thing with, you know, catching his beat, like, clash up with the content being, you know, looking back on, you know, Harsh Life, and with these specific beats, like, basically, it's clashing. Now, I remember there's like seven tracks on here. The last song is The Cold, where it ends with On a Summer Love Your Death. Yeah, you're just but you're going back to your life. Excuse me, the last track, Paris of Southeast, which of course got to stick going, like you're playing back going back to the intro, which is Southeast to Paris, which is like basically the album's like a loop. You can play it on a loop, see, you know, like it going back and all that shit. Which I kinda like. Yeah, I think this EP is really good. I kind of hoping whenever he makes his next album, hope he tends to get it out of to do some touching on there. I mean, yeah, it was kind of good. Yeah, I would definitely take the album, a full album, if Kenyon was on it. But yeah,
they can call it Simple 2. It's a bit more complicated.
Too simple, too damn. too complicated.
Make it happen.
Right, next up, yeah, right. Next up, Curly Chris with Death Fame. Way back in the earlier days of this podcast, I have been, you know, been like a lot of Curly Chris albums. I've been liking, like, since I started listening, like, I have like that project from 2017, which I can't bit, but I can't really get the name of it, but I know it's like Everything About You Is Fine, like that shit, like I like that project, and then you got Everything's Fine, like every, like since then, like he has released, he's at least good work, but not work that, you know, that kept that got me going back to as much, like Everything's Fine with Jean Grey, and of course, Guns, and now you got with a Death Fame, man. I gotta say, okay, it's the first time in a while that I actually got me going back a few times. Like, I dig more of the melancholy and tuneful sound throughout. I think it's him going back to his basics, which I kind of like. Like the sound of the piano and moving songs, like this sound good. Like he's singing on Alive and Always Living. Like, all right, I kind of dig that shit. Like he does go into more, you know, like feeling the, like bearing the weight of his career as, you know, as a rapper while and all the while there's more, you know, more underground New York rappers immersing trying to get a name out, like people like Mike and Navy Blue, like Craig is still hanging in there, like as a veteran who's still hungry for that, thing and still wanting that shit, which I get, and of course. And of course, he talks about how he kind of doesn't like how those rappers get their acclaim or their flowers after their death, which is like, you give to me right now, like I'm still alive. You can give me my credit, like right now. I'm living, like I don't end up in the ground. And now you show me love, which you do kind of get is like you do kind of get like this project like I do kind of. I do kind of have a lot of things, like, I think it's good about this project. Like, okay, like, you got some features from Naked Blue with So Tired You Can't Stop Dreaming, which, okay, I did, like, The Sky Is Blue Because the sunset is red with Pink Sifu and More Of, I can't get the name of it. You got the one Joy Kui, I mean, Chewy Pro Proudest with a Denmark Vesey and JG Cicero. Damn, that is a mouthful. And of course, Excuse My Back, the inner check with a Cavalier, which I like. I was thinking this album a lot more than I expected. I respect Chris as an MC who used to, you know, as always, a lot more for faking shit. This is one that I do tend to look back the most, at least around. Let's see how the year turns out, because it's pretty good. It's a pretty good album. Right, next up we have Flume with Palaces. So with Flume, I have been, you know, like I said, I love the album Skin, and I love that mixtape that earlier a few years back, Hiatus is Flume, and I know it's for, you know, with the mixtape is of him. Okay. While Skin is more of his mainstream turn, Hiatus is Flume is more him like getting out of that shit, which I sort of get. Like, you want to be more experimental, like more like, you know, less, you know, less poppy, which I kind of get. With Palaces, you do get that for a bit, although I must say, while I'm liking it fine, it's not as enthralling as the mixtape or even as Skin, because like there was some experimental shit going on, and it's never something that catches me the most. I mean, the tracks say nothing with Maya, whatever her name is. I didn't really care that much. When I first talked about on the episode once. I do like some of the features you always get. Like, you always get the features with Kuka on Escape, which, okay, I like. And of course, I just really like the features from Caroline Polachek and Damon Albarn with Sirens and Palaces, the title track, respectively, which, okay, I get that. Like, there is some things where they do get some moments of thrills and all that shit. Although, I will say, in terms of it, Going back to it, like, it's fine. It's fine looking back into it. It's fine going back with a bit, but I wouldn't call it as much as, you know, just one that would get them inside, like how does this Flume or even Skin? But yeah, the album is fine. I just wouldn't call it my favorite. Right, next up. Batman, Bodhi J is a real Batman with Killing Nothing. Now, I think this is an EP or an album, because I thought it was an EP at first, or was it an EP? I don't know, because all I know is this thing is 13 tracks, 42 minutes, maybe it is an album, I don't know.
On both fronts, it kind of seems like it's an album to me, like track length and time-wise. I'm just saying.
So, with this, I really don't got much to say about this project. I do like it better than the last project from him and Batman. I mean, it got more tracks and more tracks. Maybe I'm biased because I'm used to Bodhi with The Alchemist and all, maybe J. Versace, but real Batman is actually not that bad in production. Like, I do kind of dig his shit. It's more shouty and murky type production that does got that, you know, that, you know, that's that haunting street shit feel, like especially on joints like a Five Mississippi, which I kind of fuck with a bit. I also fuck with joints like Madeline with Crime Apple and Crime Transactions with Knowledge the Pirate, who I don't think is a pirate for real, but I don't know. But I really don't have nothing new to say. I have nothing new to say about Bull James' album, because like you know when he talks about that drug shit, the street shit, which again it is very quartet. If you know Boy, for his tone, his very slow delivery, which again I feel like that actually helps it more with such like this, because it paints it as something that's work, not just glorifying the shit, which I do really, really like about that. So yeah, that's all I got to say about that one. And one other fast one we got here. Your old Droog with Yod Stewart.
Oh God, right, that was this month.
Last month, whatever. Like, again, I got not much to say about this one. Like, it is a very, you know, short sweet one. This was an EP, an actual EP. Like, you know, usual punchlines is, you know, his work or storytelling, all that shit, and you know, and some interesting stuff behind it. I just don't know what I'm getting into. And okay, what I got through is pretty solid. I know there's a lot of projects he be releasing. Like, I know I missed out on the Yacht Wave, which I knew to check out. I did catch the Wolf of Wall Street too, which I still like from them. I think this one is best ones of the year so far. But yeah, this one's pretty fine too. That's all I got from that. Okay, that's five good ones. Let's get to the bullshit now.
Oh dear.
Jack Harlow.
No.
Come on.
Oh, Mark. Why?
Did you not hear the Fergie sample the first time?
You could have just lied. We could have not and said we did.
Yeah, but you need to prove they saw the review if they did, I don't know, but Yes, I did listen to Jack Harlow, Come Home, The Kids Miss You. And maybe the kids thinking, maybe they don't miss him as much. Yeah, this album is terrible. That album is bad.
Why couldn't Lil Nas X be my dad?
Well, people have been saying that for a while now, especially when the BET Awards nominated Jack Harlow instead of Lil Nas X for male hip-hop rapper.
Oh, God, what the fuck?
That's where the diss song came from. Now it makes sense.
Yeah, because it's like not the guy who was featured on Lil Nas X's song that year, but yet you'll nominate the actual main artist.
The Boondocks is right. BET is a force of evil in the world.
And okay, I know. First Class was shit, but I was thinking maybe fine. That one track might have been shit. Maybe his other songs might be good now. Maybe there'll be some good deep cuts in there. Well, fuck me, having hope. And the thing is, I did this with debut before trying to get this one, and that one's just, man, this one is, well, worse. It's worse. Like, this is track called I Do Anything to Make You Smile, with him trying to be the romantic motherfucker. And while I was like, yeah, whatever. And then he named drops Ed Sheeran with a line like this. And then I sing him like an Ed Sheeran song to you, because I love the shape of you. You. Oh my God.
Oh.
You referenced one of the most unsexy songs I've ever heard.
I think I'm gonna hurl up the fried rice I had for dinner.
Yeah. And then there's a song called Side Piece made for his, well, side piece. Even though I'm not sure doing that will get you way more than it. It's way considering you have a line like getting laid like having you cream filled on some donut shit, which ew.
Oh God.
Also, if y'all co-sign this, but get Megan Thee and Cardi B shit, I can't take you seriously anymore. There's a track named Dua Lipa. No, really, a track. It's called Dua Lipa. We tried to shoot a shot with her, which apparently he did contact her. Didn't contact her to see if she's okay. What he said, it's okay, I guess. Although I bet she might regret that shit.
Yeah. You know, it just be like that sometimes.
And then you get the same boring bullshit of, you know, shit of him. Fucks how he gets. Him flexing how his girl's ex still got shit on them, but and then with blah 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 and all that shit. Like it's very mediocre, mediocre shit with very like mediocre minimalist and trap production that sounds very very cheap. The features, hell, the album like a 2011 album. To be honest, hell, the features fall after hell, the features fall after me too. Considering they got features from Pharrell, Justin Timberlake, Lil Wayne, and Drake. Considering the song Church Held Down sounds like a Drake song, considering it's not something people made, and it's not just as a monotone as a modern Drake track. And Drake makes a little diss to Pusha T about some shit about how he want to get back at him. You know, if I do that, and then Pusha T will respond back. And also, for Pharrell's contribution, his legend lyrics to Movie Star, it is fucking weak. Like, it's like, I need that peanut butter, yeah, that Jif shit, you and me should do a tape, that Piff shit.
I'm sorry, okay. I zoned out after peanut butter? Is that what you were saying?
Also, want to get into this little Wayne verse, which me lying about, you know, shrimp iodine poisoning, which Fantano pointed out in his review, and then people pointed out Danny Brown said the same thing in one of his songs. The difference is Danny Brown's a better rapper. Shut the fuck up.
Hear, hear.
Just because, look, you got context of saying shit like that. Sometimes it can work. Sometimes it can't. It worked with Wayne, so shut up. The only tracks I like on here is mostly Nail Tech and State Fair. Those are two last tracks on there. And other than that, this album sucks. This album sucks. Like, is this him doing the same topic? Is this him doing like him basically being a womanizer, him being famous, and just repeating himself? Like, wow, this is just bad. It looks like this Buddha's point. I mean, the thing is, I didn't think it'd be a bad album at first, but it's like, no, this is just shit. Like I figured be disappointed as the Cordae album from this year, but at least Cordae didn't do this stupid shit. That was just boring. It's just boring and bad. That's worse. I'd rather be bored than be bored and disgusted with this shit. This is just, you know, generic, blasé, and not worth giving a shit about.
So what you're saying is 10 out of 10.
Yeah, having a year, baby.
It's the Morbius of albums.
Oh, damn. I didn't deserve that. But fuck it.
What are you talking about? It sold like 4 bajillion copies on day one. Totally.
Just like that Tory Lanez project.
Uh-oh.
The same day as, you already know.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know we had an album out.
He put out something. It doesn't matter.
It don't matter. None of this matters.
Yeah, none of this matter. Go look at your KFC thing. Maybe I might try that meal if, I don't know, it might be good enough, even though I ain't been to KFC in a while.
I'm greatly questioning every purchase I ever made there. So anyway, let's move on to the next part of this podcast, the third, fourth of it, as it were. Would this be divided into 5 sections if we count that intro part? At least as far as discussion, this will be the roughly 50 to 75% mark of the episode here, where it's me talking about stuff. And this is kind of a light month as far as stuff that I actively listen to. I only have my 2 top picks here and a couple of quick picks. So let's, of course, reiterate from my perspective that, yes, this Ibaraki album Rashomon is indeed quite good. As a matter of fact, to put it as directly as I can, if most of Trivium's discography sounded more like this album, I'd probably like Trivium a lot more. I don't know, just something, it hits like that. I obviously like my very rough, gritty aesthetics, but I don't like a lot of the true cult shit. And Trivium, a lot of the time, just kind of seems like so, like, straightforward in the grand scheme of modern metal that it doesn't do much for me. This is kind of the just right there. It has pretty much the best of what you would want from both sides. A lot of the actual instrumentation is a lot of that very, like, punchy, monstrous thrash and groove heavy instrumentation with the huge guitar riffs and, you know, the intricate melodies, the drums booming and pounding. Seriously, this might be some of the best sounding drums I've heard all year in metal, not just in terms of like the composition, but also production as well. And yeah, that production gives you that roughness and it just all sounds great, especially with how it helps complement Matt Heafy's particular vocals, you know, hitting those huge bellowing screams and having that nice melody to it in a lot of places. Like, you heard it in the singles like Tamashi no Hokai, that freaking Mario Coin sound effect, very much sounding like Trivium, but a lot rougher and having a lot of those riffs, grooves, cleans. You have tracks like Kagutsuchi demonstrating its own sense of, like, driving blunt force momentum with a lot of those Trivium-esque thrashy tempos, some very Gojira-esque drumming, hell, even the folk instrumentation with, like, woodwinds and good old shamisens, or shamisen. I'm not sure how you would refer to that in this context, singular or plural, but either way. You have the pseudo-title track here, Ibaraki Doji, which is a lot more melodramatic, infusing a lot of those grandiose violin strings over top its furious metal assault, and throwing in a somber acoustic bridge in there. Again, it's just the right amount to kind of balance out all the aggressive roughness. It's very intricate, you know, in that regard. So you also have, you know, the track Ronin, which for me is my, you know, personal favorite. You get a lot of those intricate guitar melodies, the soaring dramatic vocals on Heafy's end, and then, of course, the aggressive harsh screams of Gerard Way on the other, which, between this and the recent MCR song release, I really hope we get a particularly nasty edge on that next MCR project, whenever it shall grace our ears. So, yeah, just really strong stuff all around, and if you're sleeping on this, then you should not do that. It is, incredibly strong shit. And then, of course, we have the other album that I really, really liked here, Cave In, Heavy Pendulum. Many thought 2019's Final Transmission was probably going to be the last we ever heard of the band, especially following the death of bassist Caleb Schofield, but the group is obviously still kicking around, especially being rejuvenated after having played some benefit shows for Schofield's family, and I think they might have had the blessing of his mother to continue. Or am I thinking of a different band? But either way, yeah, obviously they've been reinvigorated to put out some new material. And of course, for an album called Heavy Pendulum, it definitely likes to swing its weight around a lot, starting with the sludgy, low-end riffs and driving tempo of New Reality, drenched in a ton of that overdrive and fuzz, a lot of those squealy tremolo leads, and some noticeably heavier vocals than last time. That energy continuing through on tracks like Floating Skulls and even Amaranthine, with the aggressive stomp of the drums, the great mix of melodic and gnarly vocals from, you know, all the instrumentalists who are also backing vocalists, and lead vocals from good old Steven Brodsky. A lot of that very satisfying, like, low-end bass-heavy sound all swirling together into kind of like this great wall of post-metal noise. Of course, on the other side of the coin, you have the tempo letting up a bit on songs like Blood Spiller, which is a lot moodier feeling, and of course gives you the majesty of a music video from Brodsky's friend Gworsenio Hall. And even one of the first singles we got, Blinded by a Blaze, which is this very slow, mournful kind of tune with its kind of a tremolo post-rock guitar melodies, the slow syncopated chug riff, stuff like that. And then, of course, there's also the track Nightmare Eyes, which really emphasizes the groove with its focus on kind of a 3-4 rhythm throughout the whole thing. The title track, honestly, kind of reminds me of, like if the band took a few cues from, like, peak-era Alice in Chains, mixing that into, like, a contemporary post-metal soundscape. And while the production and songwriting fill up the mix with a lot of those walls of sound and stuff, there is the occasional more kind of you know, breather here and there, most prominently on the towards the back half of the album with the song Reckoning, which is a lot more mellow, comparatively speaking, which is mainly carried by this drifting electric guitar lead, a lot of acoustic guitar strumming, and even being fairly light on percussion. There's a small bit of drumming towards the end, but most of it is this kind of stomp clap rhythm on like one of those box percussion things, whatever they're called. I think it's a cajon, I want to say.
Yeah, you know that's the right term, cajon.
Got it. So, yeah, Cave In, you know, pushing past the death of one of their most crucial members. And I think, at least for what it's worth noting, there's a couple of songs that still have some contributions from him. So I guess there was, like, a lot of material he had that they were able to work off of for that last album and this one. But, yeah, really good stuff. And now we get into the quick round of albums here. First off, the new Misery Index album, Complete Control. Not much to say here because it's pretty much another Misery Index album with the group doing pretty much exactly what they do best with an absolutely furious assault of, like, you know, just fiery, angry, death grind material. Very sharply produced, very punchy, heavy, very satisfying material. And, of course, taking aim at how fucked a lot of American society is these days, which, that's always grand. From the guys in Primitive Man, their EP Insurmountable. About a half hour or so of just aggressive, droning, speaker-destroying, noisy sludge. If you're with it, you're with it. If you're not, you're not. I am indeed with it. This new Man with a Mission album, following up last year's Breaking Across the Walls Part 1... Just for the record, off the top of my head, I'm not sure if any of the songs on this album were used as OPs in any anime recently. For the record, Part 1 is the one that has Merry-Go-Round from My Hero Academia Season 5. But, I mean, this album is alright. Like, it's not quite... Let me put it like this. Like, I listened to the entire Man with a Mission discography this past month, and there's definitely a point where, like, those first albums are a lot of, like, the really, really good material. And then you get over to that sort of crossover point where it kind of feels like they're losing some of that spark, but it's not bad or anything. It's just there. But yeah, outside of that, there's also the last of my quick rounds, the new Blut Aus Nord project, Disharmonium Undreamable Abysses. I mean, it's very, very aggressively atonal, discordant, kind of progressive Black and Death stuff. This stuff can be hit or miss with me. When I like it, I really like it. When I'm don't, I'm just eh. And this album's just, I mean, it's all right, but I'm hardly not going to remember it come year end list time. I'm probably going to hear better stuff in this field than that. I'm just saying. And that's basically it for the quick round. And I have no lowlights here. So, as we're recording this, we've just about crossed roughly an hour of time that we've been sitting here talking albums. And before this, we had a bet, or at least we're throwing out humorous guesses, on how long it would take us to have a thorough group discussion of the one particular album we've been alluding to. Interestingly enough, now we have a very clean dividing point here, so we can at least time this out. So, let's see where this goes. You will probably not be surprised to learn that the album in question is, of course, Kendrick Lamar, Mr. Morale, and the Big Steppers. I mean, how could it not be? That, like the man said, 1,855 days. 5 years. The last time there was a Kendrick Lamar album, Alex graduated college. And now we have this new Kendrick Lamar album, and I graduated college. I feel like there's some weird cosmic pattern here. But yeah, activity was picking up in Kendrick Lamar's camp over the past year or so. Of course, there was those two very, very memeable shitpost features on that Baby Keem album, Top of the Morning, Top of the Morning, Top of the Morning. There was that performance at the most recent Super Bowl halftime show. There was that thing, I gotta be honest, even though now we kind of have like this album out there too, I still don't really get what PG Lang is. I don't know. It's just something.
I still don't get it.
It's just something that exists, I guess. So, sure. But here we are now with actual tangible, full-on material from Kendrick Lamar, his last for Top Dog Entertainment, his longtime label, and quite a beefy lad at that, because this is a 18-track double album, 19 if you decide to count the Hard Part 5, which I think some versions of this album have.
Yes, Apple Music has it at the very end, so yeah.
Yeah, so does Tidal.
Huh, interesting. But was that something they added, like, after release, or was it there from the beginning? Because I don't think I remember it being there.
Yeah, they added it after.
Yeah, it was after.
All right, cool. So, yeah, there's that mixed into all this as well. So, what exactly does this album sound like? I mean, 5 years is quite a bit of time. Can you imagine all the stuff that happens in 5 years? Both good and extremely horrible? I'm nostalgic for those days when we didn't have a fucking plague.
Yeah, well, I think the best way to describe what this album is, it's kind of simple, actually. Kendrick Lamar Duckworth goes to therapy.
Yes. Yes, he does. Well, that's of kind of the sort of framing motif that kind of runs throughout a lot of the album. Him trying to, you know, talk out his internal demons, come to grips with, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. You could probably figure it out just by looking at the cover, which presents a contradiction in images. Him caring for, you know, two kids, his wife sitting on a bed in kind of this raggedy-looking motel room, but him still wearing a crown of thorns, as if the world still views him as a savior, let's say. We'll get to that later. So, the opening track, United in Grief, kind of lays out a lot of this. And in particular is one of the more intricately produced tracks. You have this musical odyssey mixing in a lot of jazzy and musically backmasked elements. This kind of shift over into like pianos and that cool shuffling drum rhythm. As he's going over what his life has been like over the past 20-something odd years. Kind of like, here's a summary of Kendrick Lamar up to now. And in particular, the lyrical refrain, I Grieve Different. You know, as he uses his music as a tool for sort of therapy, as well as speaking to a therapist, going off about all kinds of things like feelings of emptiness while spending tons of money, shouting out his friend Chad Keaton, who died in 2013 from like a drive-by, I think. All kinds of just, you know, the usual, there's a lot of shit weighing on his mind. And I mean a lot.
There is actually a very interesting musical motif at the start of the track as well that is reprised a couple other times throughout the album, which I thought was a nice touch. Also, I will never get to experience the feeling again of hearing this for the first time at, not midnight, because all the services were really heavy with traffic when the album drops, but at about 12 a.m. on release day, with everyone listening to it at the same time, everyone talking about it, even SportsCenter Twitter talking about it, which I thought was kind of cool.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, those times, yeah. This is why I just wait, because I'd be asleep by then.
Yeah, I was up listening to it when it dropped, which was a little bit after midnight, because all the services were overloaded with traffic, as I mentioned, but... yeah, it was a fun night. If also a very late night. I don't think I went to bed until like 1:30 that night.
Yeah, like you said, this is a long one.
Yep, a very long one. And and lyric for United in Grief. The new Mercedes with black G-Wagon. The way you front, it was awful rap. I was 20 years young, 20 million tax. Bought a couple of mansions just for practice. 5,500 jewelry, Chambers Mansion. Never had a public, wait reaction. But to get the cousins, post the caption. Pray that my enemies hold me captive.
After that opening track, we get one of the immediate next bangers on the album, N95, which just has that absolutely killer synth beat all throughout, punctuating the rhythm as Kendrick uses the metaphor of that N95 face mask to kind of represent the societal and personality masks that people wear in their everyday lives for any number of reasons, from, you know, general hypocrisy to social media clout. His usual grudges that he seems to have as of late with, you know, social media, quote-unquote, activists who spend more time yelling on Twitter than trying to affect meaningful change in a substantial way. Yeah, get used to that. That's something you'll hear quite a bit of on this album, but we'll keep getting to that whenever it's necessary.
Three words to describe this track. This shit hard.
Yes, it is.
Very, very hard. Okay. I'm the next step. Next track, Worldwide Steppers, which folks about a bit about him, his fatherhood, Reginald Spray Owsley, and you know, doing all this shit, and mostly evidently, like, holds him accountable with the one time he has sex with, he has sex with white girls. One time being on his Good Kid, Mad Titty story. Damn it, Good Kid, Mad Titty tour. Why I said Mad Titty?
Maybe it was. You never know.
I think I might be racist, or I think my ancestors might be punishing me for, or some shit like that. Which, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, so kind of that. And then this one audio from this one meme, you know, the one that goes, "Hey yo, what the fuck?"
Only without
there's no cheese.
Yeah. this is a big example of the therapy framing on the track here. It's basically presented as like a sit-down therapy session with how at least the first half of the track is spoken.
And further in, we do delve into more about, you know, relationships, like, it says on some text, like, the next track being Die Hard, which features vocals from Blast and Amanda Rafer. Is that name right?
I actually don't know, so I'm just going to say Rafer.
Okay, and of course, that was about, you know, trying to open yourself, being honest with yourself, your loved ones, having doubt, like, you know, having doubts when you maybe love and have, like, you know, you'll be loved. And while, you know, the latter, while, of course, Father Time, the track that's basically, you know, the latter have, have a long term talk that's going to be passed down from generation, like, someone would it be from your own father, somebody has a father figure, because, as both Black kids grew up and grew around the dads. Some take their mannerisms. Some can be problematic. Some can be like, oh, this is like something that, you know, can affect the life in how they go the rest of their life. And I'm just glad to say, well, he got sent out of another dimension to do this shit with him.
Yeah.
Now, where's that fucking sophomore album sample? It's been 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing to know about the therapy mantra on the album, it's not just personal issues. There's also a lot of cultural issues at large that are being brought up here, which that'll come back later in a bigger way.
A bigger way.
Like, you already kind of heard a bit of that in the aforementioned Worldwide Steppers, where a lot of the, well, my ancestors hate me for fucking a white woman is mixed in with commentary about, like, you know, people's complicity in upholding white supremacist power structures in America. Shit like that. But, yeah, kind of bouncing back and forth between bigger scale topics and more, more personal shit. You know, his growth as a person, trying to be a better lover to, you know, his partner and everything. Which certainly takes a turn on one particular track, Together, yes. A.K.A. the most fucks I've heard dropped in a song in a while. Seriously, this has got to be some kind of record or something. This is when the album gets, like, a bit too real to feel like just a artistic dramatization. Yeah. It's just this aggressive back and forth, fuck you, arguing, fuck you, bitch. The anger, this sorrow, this sense of heartbreak, the very, very extreme and at times very immature sounding frustration, in particular this whole bit where, you know, his partner is trying to leave the house and she's all like, give me my fucking keys, and Kendrick's just kind of like, you know, you have to get them first. It's a very childish sort of thing, and I think he knows that, or at least the narrator self-insert thing he knows that on some level, because there is a point where she just goes straight for his life, even going so far as to, like, invoke comparisons to fucking Harvey Weinstein and R. Kelly. And you can hear it in the mix that Kendrick just gives up at that point. That he's just like,
It is very much a too real kind of track, which, I'm going to be honest, little discomforting hearing it for the first time, and I think most people agree, because as a result of the album bomb that this album gave, the song dropped pretty low on the Billboard charts, because this is not a track you'd want to hear multiple times.
This one definitely, you know, depicts, you know, basically a toxic relationship, just, you know, them going back and forth, saying, fuck you, nigga, fuck you, bitch, really, really aggressive, really loud, well, this does make you go like, oh, shit, yeah. does make you sound like your old parents fighting,
yeah,
to be honest.
I would go as far as to say, a lot of this album is structured to be almost like an anti-singles album. We know N95 is the big single. There's another track on here that was released as an actual single. The rest of this album, though, I don't think we're going to get a whole lot of that on like radio player charts.
I kind of get that. And to finish my thoughts, we cry together. Yes, I said before, this song does paint an ugly picture. If it's uncensored.
Yeah.
Censored, on the other hand, make this meme material. Wait,
there's a censored version?
Apparently on TikTok, somebody said, let's play this on TikTok, but somebody had the censored version, which keeps saying, you. Like, it's just basically the instrument.
Of course, leave it to that app to miss the point.
I think it took away the customers and made it kind of a meme. And here's the weirdest thing about this. This is my favorite song on the album.
I mean, I haven't ranked the tracks by themselves, but I do think that We Cry Together is kind of a perfectly instructive album of what the point is. Like, yeah, it's not a singles album, because a lot of it is meant to be Kendrick grappling with his own personal demons and trying to grow, and growing as a person is often both internally and externally very, very uncomfortable, and you have to acknowledge a lot of uncomfortable shit if you're going to progress somewhere. He even mentions this a lot as far as, like, external perceptions of himself. Like, we've mentioned that, like, I think a bit on Damn, but also a lot here. There's a lot of pot shots taken at, you know, stuff like cancel culture and, you know, notions of free speech, very specifically through the lens of being an artist trying to express himself in, like, an honest manner. Because there tends to be this very, like, in some cases, not all, there's like this overreactive nature to any sort of controversial art that like stifles the ability of an artist to express themselves in a complicated, honest way, rappers included. Which, I mean, like, if you want your art to be like, you know, as non-threatening as possible, I mean, that's what Marvel Studios is for, isn't it? Not to throw fuel on the fire on that discourse, because God, film Twitter can eat it.
We don't need it no more.
No.
But, like, there is the tiny sliver of a point there that often the most compelling and engaging art out there is that which is honest and direct to the point of being very, very uncomfortable. Which I realize, that probably comes most to a head on the track Savior, which I think is the one that kind of, like, states the point of the album most explicitly in the intro lyric. Kendrick made you think about it, but he is not your savior.
Not your savior.
As much as you might think that this man is a god amongst men in the industry, he's still a dude. His brain is the same pink squishy mass that the rest of us are, as grotesque an image as that is. And you might think he's very special for making compelling art, but he's still got to work through shit.
Yeah.
You know,
interesting about that, he's not just talking about himself. He goes on to say, Cole made you feel empowered, J. Cole, but he is not your savior. Future said, get a money counter, but he is not your savior.
That's your savior.
LeBron James, made you give his flowers, but he is not your savior. It's another cultural thing at bay here.
Yeah, there tends to be a lot of hero worship in these circles, and he even calls that into direct question, frequently asking through the song, what would his fans think of his music if they had to accept the premise that he's not the flawless individual the world seems to think that he is? Also, there's a couple of choice pot shots at COVID conspiracy weirdos, and that's always welcome.
Hi yes. there, Kyrie Irving.
And let me just say, finally, this rapper who don't believe that stupid COVID conspiracy bullshit, or at least whatever the fuck, or at least don't do the anti-vax bullshit, finally. Because I'm getting sick of hearing all these anti-vax bars from various fucking rappers.
Yeah, the lines in question, by the way, seen a Christian say the vaccine marked the beast, then he caught COVID and prayed to Pfizer for relief, and I caught COVID and started to question Kyrie. Will I stay organic or hurt in this bed for 2 weeks? If you're taking advice of any kind from Kyrie Irving, just go ahead and walk off the edge of the imaginary flat earth he believes in.
Oh God. Don't tell me Kyrie's one of those too.
Yeah.
He is
very much a I'm smarter than all of you kind of guy, which, sure helped him a whole lot getting swept out of the playoffs a couple months ago, but I digress. Before we move on, quick mention the track Purple Hearts with Summer Walker and Ghostface Killa. Fantastic track. Some of the best lines from Ghostface you've heard in a long time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to quote this from Summer Walker. It ain't love... If you don't judge me for my past, no, it ain't love if you ain't never eat my ass. Yes, I have to say that.
I mean, I'm not sure how I would argue against that? Question mark? That is a sign of extreme trust, I will say. I think. I don't know. I'm still a virgin. But, very choice song and some good Ghostface bars there.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah. Second disc, the first track on that, Count Me Out. It brings in the, I'm just going to call it the overture motif that we hear at the start of the album. It comes back here for what's basically another therapy session. Session 10, Breakthrough, as the song says.
Yeah, and at this point, it's when he finally realizes, like, something that's been holding him back. Like, he's very psychologically hung up on a person that meant a lot to him, more than likely a romantic love interest, and he reaches this point, finally, where he wasn't that appreciated. He was too, like, I guess good for her, and he, like, if he wants to move on and be a better lover to who he's with now... He needs to just find out how to let that go and move beyond that, which I gotta admit, given the last 3 or 4 months of my life, that might have hit a lot harder than I would have liked to admit.
Miss regrets, as the song says.
Yeah.
But from, you know, Count Me Out, starting out disc two, then, you know, going into songs like Savior and... there's a reason I bring up all the stuff about, you know, complex artistic expression and often being uncomfortable, because third song that seemed to stir up the most discourse, as it were. Now, I'm just going to lay the facts of the situation as level-headed as they are. The song in question is called Auntie Diaries. And it literally opens directly with, like, ooh, you know, sort of the intro piece, the lyric, my auntie is a man now. So, very direct. Most of the song is supposed to be, you know, in reference to the LGBTQ society and acceptance of people in that community. And it's interesting that it comes from that very specific framework of, you know, a rap song, considering that the genre is very notoriously not friendly to that community, just how considering how often it casually drops slurs as insults in that regard. And a lot of the narration is kind of like either Kendrick or like a proxy for Kendrick sort of thinking about this stuff as a from the perspective of a kid trying to sort of understand and accept, you know, what's going on with his uncle, you know, said uncle unfortunately getting publicly outed in the church, him trying to, you know, work through his hang-ups of, well, okay, the biggest point of contention for this song is that Kendrick is trying to learn how to grow beyond the habit of just casually dropping lots and lots of slurs, which, to be honest, that's a thing that kids tend to do a lot because when you're young and stupid, you have no psychological filter. Whether it's calling people, you know, the F word over Xbox Live, or, you know, shouting racial slurs, or even, you know, ableist slurs. That stuff happens, and you can either, like, you know, stay stuck in that pathway or at least try to grow beyond that. The point of contention in this particular song is that the way it makes its point has Kendrick repeatedly dropping the F-bomb all throughout the song. Sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say this: there are three layers to this track that make this particularly difficult to dissect. One, this does have references to a character, or at least a name, from Good Kid, Mad City. I don't know how strong of a tie it is, but it is there. Second, this is a bit of a mixture of the personal and the cultural issues combining, given the subject matter. And third, I don't know if this is being misconstrued based on individual perception or perspective. I think we have to take this sort of at face value within its own context of what it's trying to get across, within its own narrative in a bubble, so to speak. I've been trying to figure this song out for weeks. I still don't have a strong grasp on it.
I'll admit, listen to this song, I mean, I get where it's coming from. I know it's not coming from a place of hatred because I know, coming from, you know, experience, like, yeah, we could be homophobic and transphobic, especially around our own, you know, our own people who are, you know, who are part of the LGBTQ community. And of course, it goes more and more in danger of people throwing out those homophobic and transphobic, you know, shit at them. And okay, I will admit, maybe because me hearing, you know, the F word slur, like, I kind of get uncomfortable. I say nigga a lot on this show. I wouldn't say that word because, one, I just don't feel comfortable saying that word, to be honest. In scope of things, he's showing, like, you know, he's trying to learn from this shit. He's trying to make sure that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, that he learns from experience, that, you know, to be more mind of, you know, of people like this around his community like that. And at first I'm thinking, I don't know, did he fumble it a bit? I don't think he did, or maybe he did. I mean, maybe he did. It's like, I've been questioning about this since I heard it, because I know Ark be uncomfortable. I know about that shit. I know how some things will make you uncomfortable like that.
Speaking as someone who has been called that particular six-letter slur a couple times in my life, yeah, I'm not a fan of it. But, and this is a very stretched-out definition of but, in the context, I don't have a problem with it, of what it's trying to do. The intention seems pure enough. The execution is a bit muffled. I don't know how else to describe it other than it feels... I'm not sure if provocative is the right word for it, but or deliberate. It feels like it's trying to do something good, but it just doesn't have everything honed in to accomplish said good. The effort's there.
Yeah,
the execution is just a bit off, which is kind of weird to say, considering this is Kendrick Lamar we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've been trying to figure out where... Here's where I think I ultimately land on this. First off, I feel it's important to acknowledge that as far as how the LGBTQ community has reacted to this, it kind of seems like the reaction from that community is split down the middle. Like, there are some that, like, chastise it, especially considering the song makes reference to a notorious incident where Kendrick invited a white woman fan on stage.
Oh, yeah.
And there was that really uncomfortable part where she, like, said the N-word and, like, hey, can you sing this part again? Just not say that word. And then ultimately just shoot her off stage. And some people were like, how are you going to make a song about how it's bad to use slurs and then drop the F-bomb? But then there's, like, the other half of the coin, which seems to be making the point that I ultimately lie on here, which is, okay, we've stated that one of the underlying motifs of the album is as a whole is Kendrick engaging in a lot of self-examination and attempting to grow beyond where he used to be as a person. And that point that was being made in Savior is that if you're going to grow as a person, you can't grow past your previous, like, ignorant, toxic ugliness without acknowledging that said toxicity is there first. Because otherwise, what are you trying to grow out of? How do you have an idea of where you're supposed to progress from if you don't know where you've been? And so, while I think there could have been a somewhat more tactful way to handle this, especially considering that there is the dead naming of Caitlyn Jenner in this song, which, look, I hate Caitlyn Jenner, but that's no excuse for dead naming. Come on now. That is ultimately where I lie on that. I get the intent. Like, how are you supposed to grow if you don't acknowledge where you've been? That's ultimately what my, as much of a conclusion as I can dawn on here. But with that discourse out of the way, we could at least move on to something slightly less uncomfortable, like generational trauma and sexual assault. It doesn't ease up any further, especially on the track Mother Sober.
Mother Eye Sober.
Yeah. Wait, is that an eye? I thought it was like the little like vertical line separator thing. What do they call that in computer terms?
I have typography terms. Yeah. So just as a before we move on, we're just gonna not talk about Kodak Black, right?
He exists.
Yeah
that's about it.
That seems intentionally provocative. I get why, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it either. And the thing is, it ain't the first time that he co-signed the problematic artist from Florida.
The man has a complex brain. We understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the theme of, like, you know, inheriting generational anxieties and traumas is conveyed here through, you know, I'm actually not entirely sure how much. Okay, so I'm not sure if there's, like, a narrator proxy here or it's Kendrick trying to speak directly. Because what I was looking up on, like, you know, trying to figure out what the song was, the full context here, it's his mother kind of interrogating him about whether or not he's ever been sexually abused as a kid, which the mother, she's asking because she recognizes the telltale signs because she was, you know, sexually abused herself. And him trying to recognize that pain, as well as the occasional, you know, reference to the fact that something we've been hearing quite a bit recently is about, you know, this disturbing trend of prominent male rappers having been sexually abused as children, like Lil Wayne, or as we heard on his most recent album, Denzel Curry.
Yeah, or even from last year, IDK.
It's, again, it's a lot. just a lot.
Yeah. In case anyone doesn't know, the album is split into two discs, although it's not what you think of in the title. It's actually the other way around. The Big Steppers disc is definitely the more aggressive, quote-unquote, banger kind of side of the album, whereas the Mr. Morale side is stuff like this, where it gets real and very heavy.
Yeah.
Also worth shouting out, Beth Gibbons from Portishead on the track. Fantastic.
I agree. It almost makes me want to actually try listening to Portishead. I don't think I ever have before. So that's pretty much the full extent of all the notes I had on my album. I'm pretty sure there's stuff I missed.
Well,
those were the stuff that stood out the most to me across this entire experience of an album.
Well, Mother Eye Sober actually does end with a bit of a spoken word passage featuring, I believe, Kendrick's wife and I believe his children. I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because in that, I think it was a Worldwide Steppers where he is, in fact, talking about the fact that in the 5 years that he was, away, the 5 years between albums, he had two kids.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably yeah. The ones on the album art.
Presumably, yeah. And the album does end with that musical motif. Before I go and fast asleep, love me for... Yeah, you know that whole thing. Mirror is a very interesting closer. Feels like almost the climactic resolution of the therapy sessions. Or out of all these, experiences, Kendrick ends up with three words. I choose me. Basically saying he's going to be doing things for him. Even as the song ends with the repeated lines of I choose me, I'm sorry. Which seems like it ties back into the notion of what Savior is about. Almost feels like he's letting us, the fans, down by not being this, omnipotent, omnipresent being, and instead being him, which that's nothing to apologize for. We understand. We get it. We just don't want you to kill yourself over all this stuff. Take care of yourself, first and foremost.
Yeah, mental health is important.
Yeah, that's probably why it's good for him to, basically have like an emotional binge and purge of all the ugliness, lying within. At least then you have like a relatively less, burden, baggage, slate of negative feelings and stuff to work from. So, yeah, that was it is a lot. But not just like in terms of sheer size of album, but heaviness of content. This new Kendrick project is, as always, a lot to take in. A lot of really, there's, some great bars of production, but also a lot of really uncomfortable subject matter that, again, is kind of the reinforced point that it's trying to get at through the album. He is not your savior. He is a person. Will you accept him if you know that he is a flawed human being just like everyone listening to his albums?
Yeah. A lot of the talk about the album as a whole has been saying how it's not as, deep or difficult to comprehend as it seems on face value. I kind of agree with that, although it is very, at times, obtusely heavy, which doesn't do well for repeated listenings. Though I can see and understand the importance of why it is so heavy. Not sure where in the catalog this would rank. Might have to sleep on it a little bit more.
Yeah, we got about another 6 months, so we'll see at the very least how this, kind of percolates and where it lands on, top album list positions and stuff.
Yeah. Short version, it's good. Listen with headphones on. Maybe take it at a slower pace.
Here.
I would say it's for me, this is an album that I will say that this is something that you should take your time into going in. because you know we get into, because you know how this shit is definitely heavy, you know, from the content and even the length. The length isn't, it don't really feel that long, to be honest. I mean, I know it's like an hour and 13 minutes or an hour and once you get the hard part five in there, it doesn't really feel that long. It's not like a slog or anything. It's actually well paced, to be honest. This will be an album that at first will have some positive results depending on how you feel, and then when you really get into it, you're thinking about, you know, the concepts or the things about Cinnamon as just big savior that everybody wants him to be. I do get this now with him trying to learn from himself, trying to make sure that I'm trying to have these fucking flaws that I'm trying to work through. And I will say for the album, like, with the production wise, like, it is very varied. Like, you do have, you major production from people like J Pounds, DJ Dahi, Al Soundwave, who did the most production, Beach Noise, who also did the Horror Part 5. And, of course, I didn't mean just to be quiet, we got together. Now, you mentioned why. You mentioned why I sort of did the check the most, or what? Well, you know what? Just guess one reason why I like to check a bit. Go ahead, guess.
Could it be a certain O'Clock, perhaps?
Yes. The Alchemist made this beat, and this beat sounds like a fucking Griselda beat. Which, oddly enough, did get used to get by being the butcher on a song. He did a benefit of the Buffalo, but that's another story. But yeah, a lot of people are working here. Like, you got Fred Williams working produced on Mr. Burrell, Boy Wonder on 95. You got songwriting comes from Sam Dew. You got Thundercat on bass for Die Hard and Mother I Sober. And you also get some narration from this German self-help spiritual author, Eckhart Tolle, who's mentioned him numerous times throughout the album.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, Levy. Now, like I said, it's going to be hard, you know, ranking this if it's high, like not only as of the year, but its catalog overall, it's gonna be, you know, this album, we'll have to see how I take it, and given that, I guess when other people take it, trying to let it seep in, see how to do that shit. I guess we'll know by the time it gets to December.
Mm-hmm. Here.
Yeah, and this is how we live this one out with TDE. He went on swinging.
Yeah. Though there was a surprising lack of TDE features on here. I wonder if that was done by
Yeah, that's the thing. The thing is, you're trying out with them and they don't get no features from here.
But at least we got Baby Keem on here on two songs.
I'm saving your interlude. I mean, what's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's also credited as a producer on N95. So, yeah.
Oh. Here. All right. So that was surprisingly under an hour for just one album.
Yeah, about 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's usually like double the length that we spend on time for any other album. So I'd say we got some good discussion out of it. And if any of these albums tickle your fancy, we're going to leave a playlist for, well, at least the ones that we liked. We're not going to make you listen to crap.
You will not be listening to Fozzy this month. Don't worry.
You better thank us for that. I could do that, but I respect the listeners too much.
Don't worry, you're not going to hear Jack Harlow singing about donut cream shit.
Yeah, although now that you mentioned it, I think I might actually get a KFC chicken sandwich. Those are surprisingly good. But, yeah, so thank you for listening. Be sure to check out that playlist and check out all the other links on the social medias and stuff. You know where to find us on Twitter, Facebook, the website, SuperResolution.com, all of that good stuff. So, yeah, until the next episode and the next album roundup, why does Drake hate us?